This is disc number 16.
Jigang was grinning. His flash of anger had been washed away by an unexpected, dangerous, but one-sided brawl, and an opportunity to inflict pain. He was beginning to enjoy the game. "Why didn't you just kill me?" Kaelin managed to get out as he stood watching her. "Kill you? Why would I want to kill you? Then you would just be dead. I want you alive so that I can make you suffer." The two sisters made no move to rein in their master. Kaelin knew that they would not have objected to anything he did to her. As long as his attention was on Kaelin, it wasn't on them. Before he could strike her again, light abruptly flooded the tent, drawing his attention. "Excellency," a deep voice said. It had come from the side. One of the big brutes held the carpet aside as he waited. The man looked similar to the two guards she had killed before. Kaelin supposed that Jigang had an endless supply of such men. "What is it?" "We're ready to strike your camp, Excellency. I am sorry for interrupting, but you asked to be told as soon as we were ready. You said that you wanted us to make haste." Jigang released Kaelin's hair. "All right, get started then." He swung around unexpectedly, backhanding her across the face hard enough to send her tumbling across the floor. While she lay on the floor, recovering her senses, he pressed a hand to the wound over his rib. He pulled the hand away to see how much he was bleeding. He wiped his hand on his trousers, apparently deciding that it was a relatively minor wound and nothing to be concerned about. From what Kaelin could see of him, he bore a number of scars, most testifying to injuries far worse than the one she had given him. "See to it that she doesn't get any more ideas," he told the sisters as he headed for the carpet that the guard was holding aside for him. Kaelin felt fire race down from the collar, through her nerves all the way to her toes. The burning pain pulled an involuntary gasp. She wanted to scream in rage at having that hot pain yet again ripping through her. She hated the way the sisters used the collar to control her. She hated the helpless agony they could put her in. Sister Alicia stepped closer and stood over her. "That was a pretty stupid thing to do, now wasn't it?" Kaelin couldn't answer through the stunning pain. What she would have told the sister was that it wasn't stupid at all, that it had been worth it. As long as she had breath in her lungs, she would fight them. With her last breath, if need be, she would fight. Chapter 43. At the opening of Emperor Jigang's tent, Kaelin recoiled at seeing the army of the Imperial Order up close for the first time. Distance had taken off a bit of the rougher edges. Even though she had a pretty good sense of them, it was still an unnerving sight. The dense mass of men spread unbroken to the horizon. With everyone in motion and moving about, bending, standing, turning, lifting gear, joining into ranks, saddling horses, loading wagons, with different groups on horseback moving like waves through the mass of men, it looked like an endless, churning, treacherous black sea. There was not a single man in sight, and she could see thousands upon endless thousands who looked kindly or harmless. Every single man looked grim and grisly, as if there was nothing he looked forward to in life as much as the prospect of doing violence. These men looked driven by the singular prospect of an unrestrained rampage. Kaelin feared to think of those who might find themselves in these men's path. As she took it all in, she began to notice that there were differences among the men. The closest group to the Emperor were more disciplined, orderly, and measured in everything they did. They were more attentive to their weapons. All the men in closest around the Emperor's tents looked much the same as the two Kaelin had killed. Out past them were other men dressed in different kinds of uniforms made of chainmail and leather. They all looked to be nearly as big and well-trained as the men closest to the Emperor, but their primary weapons appeared to be crescent axes. Beyond were more encircling layers of men, including men with loaded crossbows, swordsmen, and ranks of pikemen forming up in close formations, preparing for the long march ahead. While each of the layers of men around the Emperor were outfitted in their own distinctive uniforms that matched the rest of their group, they were all big, muscled, armored, and heavily armed with well-made weapons. This was the core of the Emperor's force of the deadliest, the most fearsome and formidable of his army. In amongst the inner circles were men who looked to be officers. Some gave orders to messengers, some gave orders to lower-ranking men, while others assembled in groups, making plans over maps. Yet others came from time to time to speak briefly with Jagang. Out beyond the barriers of career soldiers were the rabble, who made up by far the largest mass of the army. The weapons carried by those men—swords, axes, pikes, lances, maces, clubs, and knives—were inelegantly made, and looked all the more deadly for it. These were coarse men, who looked to be out for a riot. They shared one thing with the men in closer to the Emperor. They all looked like wide-eyed idealists intent on enforcing their beliefs under the heel of their boot. Kaelin felt as if she were stranded on a treacherous island, surrounded by monsters in a wild sea. Kaelin saw something else different in among the inner circle. There were women. At first she hadn't noticed them because their dress was so drab that they blended in with all the men. Given the way these women watched everyone, she began to suspect that they were sisters who served to guard the Emperor. There were also men who were largely unarmed, but who had a look to them that in a way reminded Kaelin of the sisters. They were probably gifted as well. None of the men or the sisters so much as glanced Kaelin's way. No one but Sister Ulysia, Sister Armina, and Jagang knew she was there. There were also young men who, by their simple loose trousers and total lack of any weapons, appeared to be slaves taking care of the menial tasks. From some of the other tents in the Emperor's compound, Kaelin saw young women emerge to be herded into wagons before the tents were taken down. By the way the men openly stared at these women, and by their scanty clothes, their purpose among the men of rank was obvious to Kaelin. The hollow, dead look in the women's eyes told her that they must have been captives pressed into service as whores. The mob out beyond made a ceaseless, noisy ruckus, while most of the men in closer were silent as they went about preparations to strike camp. Most of the men close by had studs, rings, chains, and tattooed faces with unique designs that made them look not just savage, but deliberately less than human, as if they were rejecting a higher value in favor of a lower one. Their chosen purpose in life was clearly brutality. As they went about their work, they talked little, and paid attention to orders shouted by officers riding through their midst. They worked with practiced precision, as they packed gear, readied weapons, and saddled horses. The great masses of men out beyond, though, were nowhere near as orderly or careful. They threw together their gear in a haphazard fashion. As they departed, they left behind mounds of refuse and broken plunder. They couldn't be bothered with such concerns. Their calling in life was bringing to task those who didn't believe in their superior ways. But seeing Kaelin's reaction to all the fierce men, Sister Ulysia gestured with a nod out to the men and then leaned a little closer to Kaelin. "I know how you feel." Kaelin doubted it. She didn't want to say anything because she was pretty sure that Jagang was in the sister's mind, watching for what Kaelin might have to say when he wasn't around. "It doesn't really matter how I feel now, does it?" she said to the two sisters watching her. "He will do what he wants to me." She checked the cut on her cheek from one of Jagang's rings. It had finally stopped bleeding. "He's made that clear enough." "I suppose he will," Sister Ulysia said. "He will do what he wants to all of us," Sister Armina added. "I can't believe we were so foolish." A group of officers returned with Jagang. Soldiers behind them pulled already saddled horses along with them. Other men were already taking chests, chairs, tables, and smaller items out of the Emperor's tent and loading it all into crates in the waiting wagons. As soon as the tent had been emptied, the lines came down, followed by the poles, and at last the tent itself. In a matter of moments, what had looked like a small town of tents, with the Emperor's large tent at the center, was just an empty field. Jagang said to Kaelin, "Today you will ride with me." Kaelin wondered what she would be doing the next day, but she didn't ask. It sounded like he had plans for her. She couldn't begin to guess at them, but she feared what was in store for her. She stuffed a boot in a stirrup and swung up into the saddle, then scanned the sea of men, estimating her chances if she made a run for freedom. She might be able to make it past the men because, with the exception of the two sisters in Jagang, the men couldn't remember her long enough to recall that they saw her. Out among those men, as daunting as such a thought was, she was as good as invisible. To them it would appear as if a riderless horse was running away, and they probably wouldn't want to get trampled for no good reason. The sisters, watching her carefully, mounted up as well, one to each side of her to make sure that she didn't get a chance to bolt. Even if she was invisible to the soldiers, Kayla knew that the sisters could use the collar to drop her where she was. They didn't need to be close, either. She had learned that the hard way. Her legs still ached from what they had done a little earlier. It was a good thing that she was to ride, because right then she didn't think she would make it far on foot. The sea of men had already begun moving away in a dark, surging tide. The early dawn light sparkled off millions of weapons, making the army look liquid, as if floating in the tightly formed raft of the Emperor's personal guards and retinue of sisters, servants, and slaves. They began to drift out into the vast, churning ocean of men moving north toward the horizon. They rode with the hot, rising sun to their right. Kaelin, between the sisters, in among the Emperor's personal guards, moved along in the mass of men streaming northward. She had a good view of it all from high in her saddle. At least she didn't have to carry the sisters' things on her back, as she had always had to do before. The early chatter among the soldiers soon died out with the monotonous effort of the march. Talking became too difficult for them. It wasn't long before Kaelin was sweating in the heat. Men carrying heavy packs plodded onward, eyes to the ground in front of them. To stop would probably mean being trampled. There had to be a force of millions that she could see behind them, driving north with them. Throughout the day, wagons, or men on horses, worked their way through the men, passing out food. Wagons dispersed throughout the army at intervals carried water. There was soon a line of men marching along, waiting their turn to get some water from each of the wagons rolling among them. Near midday, a small wagon arrived in the center of the Emperor's people. It had hot food that was passed out to all the officers. Sister Amina passed Kaelin the same as what the rest of them were offered. Flatbread wrapped around some kind of salty, mushy meat. It didn't taste very good, but Kaelin was starving and glad to have it. By nightfall, everyone was exhausted from the arduous march. They had eaten on the move and had stopped for nothing. They were covering more ground than she thought an army of this size capable of doing in a day. She felt as if she were coated with much of the ground they had covered. She didn't know if she would be any happier for rain that would knock down the dust, because then they would have to contend with mud. Kaelin was surprised when she saw out ahead of them what looked like the Emperor's compound. Flags atop tents flapped in the hot wind as if to welcome the Emperor home. She realized that the wagons, with all the Emperor's equipment, must have ridden on ahead and set up camp. The army was so vast and covered so much area that it took hours, if not days, for them all to pass the same spot, so the wagons would not have had to ride out ahead of the protection of the army. Men would merely have opened a path for them to race ahead through the marching men and before dark start setting up camp, so that by the time the Emperor arrived, everything would be ready. Kaelin saw meat roasting on spits over a series of fires. The aromas made her stomach ache with hunger. Other fires held steaming cauldrons on iron cranes. Slaves scurried here and there, carrying a variety of supplies, working at tables, turning spits, stirring what was in the cauldrons and adding ingredients as they prepared the evening meal. Platters with breads, meats, and fruits were already being readied. Jagang, riding directly in front of Kaelin, dismounted before his large tent. A man rushed in to take the reins. When the sisters and Kaelin dismounted, more young men ran in to take their horses as well. The sisters, as if directed by wordless commands, ushered Kaelin along with them as they followed Jagang in under the large, ornate hanging covering the tent's opening that was being held aside by a muscled soldier without a shirt. He was slick with sweat, probably from the work of erecting tents, and had a sour stink about him. Inside, it looked just like it had that morning when they had left. Just by looking at it, it was hard to tell that they had gone anywhere. The lamps were already lit. Kaelin was glad for the smell of the burning oil because it covered some of the stench of urine, manure, and sweat. There were a number of slaves inside, all rushing about the task of preparing the Emperor's meal being set out on the table. Jagang abruptly turned and seized Sister Ulysia by her hair and yanked her forward. She let out a small cry of pain and surprise at first, but quickly cut off the whimper and offered no resistance as he pulled her close. The slaves only briefly glanced over at Sister Ulysia's cry, and then immediately went back to their work as if they saw nothing. "Why does no one else see her?" Jagang asked. Kaelin knew what he was talking about. "The spell, Excellency. The Chainfire spell." Sister Ulysia was being held in an awkward and uncomfortable position, bent halfway over and standing off balance. That was the whole purpose of the spell, so that no one would see her. It was created specifically to make a person appear to vanish. I think it may have been envisioned as a method of creating a spy who couldn't be detected. We used the spell for that purpose, so we could get the boxes of warden out of the people's palace without anyone knowing what we had done. Kaelin felt as if her heart had come up into her throat at hearing how she had been used, at how her life and her memory had been stripped from her. A lump swelled in her throat at hearing the arrogant disregard the sisters had for her precious life. What gave these women the right to steal anyone's life in such a way? Only a short time ago, she had thought she was a nobody without a memory, a slave to the sisters. Now, in a short time, she had found out that she was Kaelin Amnell, and that she was the Mother Confessor, whatever that was. Now she knew that she hadn't known her name was Amnell, or that she was this Mother Confessor person, because the sisters had spelled her. "That's the way it's supposed to work," Jagang said. "So why did this innkeeper see her? Why did that little rock rat back in Casca see her?"
I don't know," Sister Ulysia stammered.
He jerked her a little closer. She began to reach up to grasp his wrists, to try to keep from having her scalp torn off. But she thought better of trying to resist anything he did, and let her arms drop to dangle from her stooped shoulders.
"Let me rephrase the question so that even a stupid bitch like you can understand it. What did you do wrong?"
"But, Excellency—"
"You must have done something wrong, or those two would not have been able to see her!"
Sister Ulysia trembled, but didn't answer as he lectured her.
"You and Armina can see her because you were controlling the spell. I can see her because I was in your minds, and so I was protected by the same process. But no one else should be able to see her!" "Now," he said after a pause to grit his teeth, "I will ask you again, what did you do wrong?"
"Excellency, we did nothing wrong, I swear."
Jagang crooked a finger at Armina. She meekly came forward in mincing steps.
"Would you like to answer my question and tell me what you did wrong? Or would you also like to be sent to the tents along with Ulysia?"
Sister Armina swallowed back her terror as she spread her hands.
"Excellency, if I could spare myself by confessing, I would. But Ulysia is right. We did nothing wrong."
He turned his glare back on the sister he had by the hair.
"It seems pretty obvious to me that you two are wrong. The spell should make her invisible, but others can see her. And yet you continue to stick to a story when that's obviously a lie. You had to do something wrong, or those two people would not have seen her."
Sister Ulysia, tears dripping from her cheeks from the pain she was in, tried to shake her head.
"No, Excellency, it doesn't work that way."
"What doesn't work that way?"
"The Chainfire spell. Once ignited, it runs its course. The spell does the work. It's self-directing. We didn't guide it or control it in any way. In fact, no intervention is possible during the process. It is ignited, and then the spell runs through its predetermined routines. We don't even know what those routines are. In some aspects, they function similarly to a constructed spell. We wouldn't dare try to tamper with any of it. The power unleashed in Chainfire is far more than we know how to regulate, and we have no way to alter such a spell, even if we wanted to." She's right, Excellency. We knew what it was supposed to do, what the result was supposed to be, but we don't know how it works. What would we change? Our goal was for it to work, to do what it was designed to do. We had no reason to try to tamper with it, so there is nothing we could have done wrong. All we did was ignite it, Sister Alicia insisted, tears starting to weep through her words. We ran the verification webs to make sure that everything was as it should be, and then we ignited it. The spell did the rest. We have no idea why those two people can see her. We were completely surprised by it.
He turned his glare on Sister Armina. Can you fix whatever is wrong?
We have no idea what the problem is, Sister Armina said, so there is no way we can fix it. We don't even know for sure that there really is something wrong. For all we know, it could be that this is simply the way the spell works, that there will be a few people who, for some reason unknown to us, can still see her. The spell is far more complex than anything we've ever encountered before. We have no idea what is wrong, if there really is something wrong, or how to correct it.
I think that maybe it was a random anomaly, Sister Alicia suggested when the silence in the tent became ominous. Those things sometimes happen with magic. Small little issues that aren't anticipated by the spell's creator slip through and aren't affected. It might be nothing more than that.
After all, the spell is thousands of years old. Those who created it never tested it, so there might have been unresolved issues they weren't aware of.
Jagang did not look convinced. There must have been something you did wrong.
No, Excellency. Not even those ancient wizards could do anything with the spell once it had been ignited. After all, the magic of Orden was created to deal with the spell if it was ever unleashed. Nothing less can alter its course.
Kaelin's ears perked up. She wondered why the sisters would have used a spell to steal the boxes of Orden that were designed to counter the spell.
Maybe their intent had been to make sure that no one could use that counter. Jagang finally released Sister Alicia by tossing her to the ground with a grunt of disgust. Her hands covered her scalp, comforting the hurt. Emperor Jagang paced as he thought about what had been told. Seeing someone peeking into the tent, he stopped and signaled. Several women entered with pitchers and poured red wine in mugs set out on the table. Serving boys began spilling into the room, carrying platters and trays filled with a variety of steaming hot food. Jagang paced, paying the slaves little attention as they went about their work. When the table was finally filled, Jagang took a seat at the carved chair behind the table. He brooded as he watched the two sisters. The slaves all silently lined up behind him, ready to do his bidding or bring him anything he requested. He finally turned his attention to dinner and dug his fingers into the ham. He squeezed off a fistful of the hot meat. With his other hand, he tore long strips off the large chunk and ate them as he watched the sisters and Kaelin, as if judging whether they should live or die. When he had finished the ham, he pulled the knife from his belt and used it to slice off a piece of roast beef. He stabbed the red slab of meat and held it up, waiting. Blood ran down the blade and down the length of his arm to his elbow, resting on the tabletop. He paused and smiled up at Kaelin. A better use for my knife than the use you had for it, don't you think?
Kaelin considered keeping silent, but she couldn't resist speaking. I liked my use better. I only wish my aim had been true. Had it been, we would not be having this conversation.
He smiled to himself. Maybe.
He took a gulp of wine from a mug before using his teeth to pull a chunk of the beef off the slab stuck on the knife. As he watched Kaelin, and while he chewed, he said, "Take off your clothes."
Kaelin blinked.
"What?"
"Take off your clothes," he gestured with a knife. "All of them."
Kaelin clenched her jaw. "No. If you want them off, you will have to rip them off me."
He shrugged. "I will do that later, just for the satisfaction of it, but for now, take them off."
"Why?"
He lifted an eyebrow. "Because I said so."
"No," she repeated.
The gaze of his nightmare eyes glided to Sister Alicia. "Tell Kaelin about the torture tents."
Excellency?
Tell her about the extensive experience we have in convincing people to do as we wish. Tell her what tortures we employ.
Before Sister Alicia could speak, Kalin spoke first. Just get on with it and torture me. No one is interested in hearing you gossip about it like an old hen. I'm sure that you'd rather make me suffer, so get on with it.
Oh, the torture isn't for you, darling.
He twisted a leg off a roasted goose and used it to gesture to a young woman behind him.
The torture is for her.
Kalin glanced at the suddenly panicked woman, and then frowned at Jagang.
What?
He bit off some of the dark goose meat. Grease ran down his fingers. He sucked the grease off the rings.
Well, he said as he picked at the meat hanging from the leg, perhaps I should be the one to explain. You see, we have this torture where the Inquisitor makes a small incision in the lower abdomen of the person in question.
He turned and poked the goose leg at the young woman's belly, just below her navel. The goose leg left a greasy spot on her bare flesh,
right about there. Then, he said, turning back, the Inquisitor pushes the jaws of a pair of tongs deep into the belly and gropes around until he is able to grab hold of a bit of the small intestine. It's all quite slippery in there, and the person being subjected to this treatment is not just lying still for it, if you know what I mean. So it usually takes a bit of doing to snag the proper bit of their insides. Once he has it, he slowly begins to pull a few feet of it out. Quite an ordeal.
He leaned over and pulled off another strip of ham.
Now, if you don't do as I say, then we are all going to go over to the torture tents.
He gestured with a limp strip of ham off to his left.
And we're going to let one of our experienced inquisitors do that to this girl behind me.
He turned an icy look up at Kalin.
All because you refuse to do as you are told. You will get to watch the whole agonizing thing. You will get to listen to her screams, listen to her begging for her life, watch her bleed, see her vital insides being drawn out of her. After the man has pulled a few feet free, he then begins winding it around a stick like spare yarn, just to keep the mess all neat and tidy. After that, he will pause and look to me. At that time, I will again politely ask you to do as I have instructed. If you again refuse, then he will slowly pull out a few more feet of her tender, delicate, bloody gut, winding it around the stick, while we all listen to her scream and cry and beg to die. This whole process can go on for quite a long time. It's an excruciatingly slow and painful ordeal.
Jagang gave Kalin a cheerful smile.
And then, near the end, you will get to see her convulse in her death.
Kalin looked up at the girl. She hadn't moved, but she had gone as white as the sugar mounded in the bowl to the side of the table. Jagang slowly chewed, and then washed the mouthful down with a swig of wine.
After that, you can watch us throw her lifeless carcass on the dead cart, with other ruined bodies of people who have been questioned. Then, I will offer Ulysses and Armina the choice of either being sent to the tents to entertain my men, who have quite the lustier desires, or, if they would rather, think of ways to use that collar around your neck to give you more pain than you have so far experienced from it. The stipulation will be that they must not allow you to pass out. I will, of course, want you to feel it all.
Outside, the din of the army carried on without let-up. But inside the tent it was dead quiet. Jagang sawed off another slab of the bloody beef as he went on.
After the sisters have exhausted their imaginations, and I believe that the incentive will spark some inventive ideas, then I will personally beat you to within an inch of your death. After all of that, I will rip your clothes off of you, and you will be standing there naked before me.
His nightmare eyes fixed on her.
Your choice, darling. Either way, in the end, you are going to comply with my order and end up standing there naked before me. What method do you choose?
Make it quick. I'll not offer you the choice again. Kalin had no choice. Resisting in this was pointless. She swallowed, and immediately started unbuttoning her shirt. Chapter 44
Jigang scooped a handful of pecans from a silver bowl and popped a few in his mouth. He smiled at his triumph as he watched Kaelin begin removing her clothes. His self-satisfied expression made her feel all the more forlorn and powerless. She was certain that her face had gone crimson. She made no further attempt to fight his order. She knew that she had to pick her battles, and this was not one she could win. She wondered if she would ever win another. She began to doubt that it was really possible. There would be no salvation for her. This was her life, her future, all there would ever be for her. She had nothing to look forward to, no reason to aspire to anything good. As unceremoniously as possible, she dropped her clothes in a pile as she removed them, not bothering to stall by folding them. When she was done, and had removed every stitch, she stood hunched in the dead silent room, not looking up at Jigang because she didn't want to face his gloating, leering triumph. She tried her best to keep her trembling from being evident.
"Stand up straighter," Jigang said.
Kaelin did as she was told. She suddenly felt weary. Not weary of physical effort, but weary of all effort. What was she struggling for? What life could she ever have? She stood no chance of ever being free, of ever experiencing love, of ever feeling safe. What chance had she of ever achieving any happiness in life? None. At that moment she wanted nothing so much as to curl up into a ball and cry, or just stop breathing and be done with it. Everything seemed hopeless. Her efforts were futile against such strength, such numbers, such abilities. She ceased to be embarrassed. She didn't care if he stared at her. She was sure that it wouldn't be long until he was finished with his dinner and then did a lot more than merely stare. She had no choice in that, either. She had no choice in any of it. She had only an imitation of life. Without the ability to control even this much of her life, control if she would have to submit to any indignity, then she didn't really have life. Life was something that others had. She breathed, she saw, she felt, she heard, she tasted, she even thought. But she did not live in a meaningful sense.
"There is a rock formation straight out from the opening to my tent," Jigang said as he leaned back in his chair. "Do you remember seeing it when we arrived?"
Kaelin looked up at him, feeling dead inside. She went through the task of doing as instructed, like a good slave. She thought about his question. She remembered seeing it. It was a long way off, but she remembered the way the dark river of men poured around the rock outcropping. "Yes, I remember it," she said in a dull voice.
"Good!"
He took a swig and set the mug down.
"I want you to walk to that rock. Don't go straight there, but go around in a circular route."
He lifted an eyebrow.
"No need to go all red, darling. The men can't see you, remember?"
Kaelin stared at him. "Then why do you want me to do this?"
He shrugged. "Well, you killed my two guards. I need some more."
"There are plenty of your men right outside." He smiled.
"Yes, but they can't see you. I want men who can see you."
Kaelin began to grasp his meaning. She suddenly began feeling very naked again.
"The way I figure it, there is probably no better way to ferret out men who can see you than to have you walk by them, showing them all you have to offer."
His gaze roamed the length of her before returning to her eyes.
"Believe me, if they can see you, there is no chance they will fail to make themselves known. I have no doubt whatsoever that if they can see you, like that innkeeper or that girl could see you, and they see you like this, then they will drop whatever they're doing and come out to pay you a kindly greeting."
He laughed heartily at his own joke. No one else in the tent so much as cracked a smile, but he didn't seem to care. Finally, his fit of laughter died out.
With all the men we have, I would bet that we are bound to net us a few who can see you. Among this many men, there are bound to be more anomalies, as Ulysses put it. He cocked his head toward her. Then we will have guards that you can't sneak up on, or sneak past, the way you did the others. You see, darling, you made a tactical mistake. You should have kept that trick for a better chance to escape. Now you wasted it.
She hadn't wasted it. She had done what she had done to save Jillian's life. Kaylin knew that she had no chance at freedom for herself. But at least she had given that gift to Jillian. There was no benefit to saying so, though, so she didn't dispute what he thought had gained him an advantage in the game he was playing with her. Kaylin could think of nothing to say that would talk him out of such a plan. Her only hope now was to remain invisible. But she didn't feel at all invisible. She suddenly felt as if, when she walked out of the Emperor's tent, every man in camp would be able to see her. She could already feel millions of lewd men leering at her.
Jagang gestured. Ulysses, Armina, you will go along, but hang back a goodly distance. If any man can see her, I don't want them to notice you two and go all shy before they have a good chance to make themselves known to us. I want any men who can see her to be eager enough and bold enough to drop whatever they're doing to come and investigate our fine young lady here.
They both bowed and as one said, "Yes, Excellency."
Jagang lost his cheerful pretense and turned menacing. "Now get going. Make a big circle to the right, through the camp to that rock formation, and then continue the circle on around back to here. Move, woman!"
Kaylin padded across the soft rugs to the carpet hanging over the doorway. She could feel his leering gaze on her. She pushed the carpet aside and slipped through the opening. Outside, facing the sprawling camp, she went stiff with dread. She forced herself, trembling every step, to walk among the hulking brutes near the Emperor's tent. Tears stung her eyes. She felt humiliated and completely naked to all the men in camp. She paused at the first defending ring of soldiers, terrified to go out among the men beyond. She wanted to scream with fury, with mortified embarrassment. She felt trapped by those who controlled her. She couldn't make her legs take another step. She looked back over her shoulder. Emperor Jagang was standing just outside his tent, holding by the hair the woman he had threatened to torture. She was in helpless tears. Kaylin had done something hard to save Jillian's life. She decided that she would devote herself to doing this, to save the life of the woman Jagang now held under such terrible threat. She, too, was a slave who had no choice in her life. Only Kaylin could make a choice that would spare the woman terrible suffering. Kaylin turned back to the pandemonium of the camp and started out. The ground was rough, and she had to step carefully to avoid not only rocks and bits of broken gear, but fresh manure as well. She reminded herself that none of these men could see her. She paused at another defensive line where big brutes stood guard. She peeked up at the man beside her. He didn't notice her, but instead watched those out beyond. So far, none of the men could see her. She looked back and saw the sisters waiting for her to get farther away. Jagang was still holding the woman by the hair. Kaylin understood the message, and without wasting a moment started moving again. She saw horses nearby and briefly contemplated making a run for them. In her mind she envisioned jumping up onto the back of a horse and galloping away, escaping out of the camp altogether. She knew it was only a fantasy. The sisters would unleash a torrent of pain through the collar and bring her down. What's more, the woman Jagang held would die. He was not a man to make idle threats. He carried them out, lest anyone ever think he was the kind to bluff. Kayla knew such an escape was impossible, but thinking about it took her mind off all the men so close around her, off all the filthy hands she couldn't help staring at. She felt completely vulnerable and exposed. She stood out among the sprawling encampment, like an alabaster water lily blossom, stranded in the middle of a vast, reeking mud flat. She moved quickly, reasoning that the sooner she made the circuit, the sooner she would be back in the sheltering protection of the tent. It was a terrible thought, Jagang's tent being her protection, that terrible man her security. At least she would be out of sight again, and right then that was all she wanted. It became the focus of her thoughts. Make the distance to the rocks and make it back. The sooner she did it, the sooner she would be back inside. Unless there were men out in this mass of soldiers who could see her, it only made sense. She had run across two people who could see her, and that was among a small sampling of people. There were millions of men in this army. The chances were that she would run across men who would see her only too well. What would she do then? She glanced back over her shoulder. The sisters looked like they were way back across a river of men. What if a man grabbed her and pulled her down, dragged her away? The sisters finally started following after, but they were a long way back. Kaelin worried about what would happen if men could see her and grabbed her. What if a whole group of men could see her? Would the sisters be able to pull a whole mob off her? Besides, the sisters were a long way back. Kaelin worried how far a rape would go before the sisters showed up. But the sisters could cast magic. Surely they would not allow men to ravish her. She wondered what made her have any such confidence. Jagang. He wanted her for himself. He was not the kind of man to let underlings have his prize of prizes. He would want to take her himself. The thought of him on top of her ran a shiver of icy dread through her. The immediate problem, though, was not Jagang, it was these men. In one fluid movement, as she passed a soldier with his back to her, she lifted a knife from the sheath at his hip. She made the motion fit in the swing of her arms, so that if the sisters were looking, they wouldn't have seen what she had done. The man glanced around, having felt something. Even though he looked directly at her for an instant, his gaze moved on and he went back to his conversation. The men she had been moving among were all still the outer rings of the many layers around the Emperor's compound. But she was now moving out beyond, in among the regular soldiers. They were drinking, laughing, gambling, and telling stories around fires. Horses were picketed among them. Wagons stood about at various places. Some men had already pitched crude tents, while others were content to cook over fires or sleep. She saw, too, women being taken into the tents. None went cheerfully. She saw other women emerge only to be snatched up by waiting men and dragged to the next tent. Kaelin remembered Jagang mentioning sending the sisters out to the tents as punishment. Hearing the women in those tents weeping made Kaelin sweat in dread of her own fate when she finally returned to Jagang's tent. As terrifying a circumstance as being taken into those tents with those men would be, Kaelin could not feel sorry for the sisters. If they ended up being raped by these men, it was not enough punishment to Kaelin's mind. They deserved far worse. One of the nearby men glanced up at her. Kaelin could see recognition flash in his eyes, eyes that fixed on her. He saw her. His mouth fell open, thrilled with his luck at what sort of woman had just stumbled into his arms, so to speak. As he rose up, before he was fully erect, Kaelin sliced his belly open from one side to the other as she swiftly continued to move past, as if nothing had happened. The man, his face registering the shock of it, weakly tried to catch his guts as they spilled out in a heavy mass. He toppled over and crashed to the ground while making panicked grunts that weren't noticed as anything more than the other raucous noise all around. When he hit the ground, his insides spilled out. Men turned to look, some shocked, some laughing, all of them thinking the man had just lost a knife fight. Kaelin didn't slow or look back. She kept moving, without breaking her stride, reminding herself of her task. Get to the rock, get back to the tent, make the circuit, do as she had been told. As a man appeared out of the crowd and rushed up to her, she tightened her muscles,
and used his momentum to drive the knife up under his ribs, ripping his vital organs apart. The lifting cut, like a punch, along with his descending weight, drove her fist through the gash and into his warm insides. By the way he went down like a sack of sand without so much as a word, she was pretty sure that she had managed to cut open his heart. As a memento of the brief encounter, she now wore a glove of his blood. She wondered where she had learned to do such things. It felt like they came instinctively to her, the way emotions just came naturally, without the need to summon them. She couldn't remember anything about herself, but she remembered how to use a weapon. She supposed that she should just be glad she could. In making her way out into the sea of men, she came to a dense island of activity. Men had all drawn back to leave an open field in the center of a low area where teams of men were playing jala. Soldiers, gathered all around in the tens of thousands, cheered on one team or the other. The game was a violent affair, with the point man encountering the worst of it from the other team. When he went down, bloodied, half the men surrounding the field cheered wildly. "Well, well," a man to her left said. "Looks like a fine whore come to pay me a visit." As she began to turn toward him, another man to the right seized her wrist, twisted, and had her knife. In an instant, both men were on her, grabbing at her, pulling her back away from the crowd gathered to watch the jala game. Kaelin fought to get free, but they were a lot stronger and had taken her by surprise. She silently raged at herself for being caught unawares like that. None of the men around noticed anything at all. They couldn't see her. She was invisible to them, but not to the two who pressed in tight to hide her from their fellow soldiers, lest they have to fight for their fresh prize. She might as well have been alone with these two. One of them shoved his hand between her legs. She gasped at the sudden violation. As he leaned in to grope her, she managed to get her wrist free. In an instant, she whipped her arm around and slammed her elbow into the center of his face, breaking his nose. He fell back, screaming, blood gushing across his cheeks and eyes. The other man laughed, seeing it as his opportunity to have her for himself. He changed direction, pulling her along, holding both of her wrists together in one of his powerful hands as he used the other to explore the spoils. Kaelin struggled and twisted, but he was far too big and husky for her. She couldn't get any leverage to break free of his grip. "You're a feisty one," he said into her ear. "What did you think, that you could avoid your sacred duty to the soldiers of the Order? Think you're too good to serve in the tents? Well, you're not. Here's my tent, so it's time to do your duty." Kaelin twisted around to try to bite him as he dragged her toward an empty tent not far away. He backhanded her. The blow stunned her. The noise of the encampment seemed to fade away. She couldn't make her muscles do as she wished, couldn't make them resist the grimy soldier as he pulled her toward the tent. Suddenly, Kaelin saw Sister Ulysses' face. She had never before been glad to see one of the sisters, but she was now. The sister distracted the man's attention from Kaelin for an instant, then pressed her fingers to the side of his forehead. Finally free, Kaelin jumped back as her captor dropped to his knees, clutching his fists to his head as he cried out in pain. "Get up," Sister Ulysses told him, "or I'll do worse by far." He stood on wobbly legs. "You are ordered immediately to the Emperor's tent to serve as a special guard." The man looked confused. "Special guard?" "That's right. You will be guarding this troublesome young lady for His Excellency." The man gave Kaelin a dangerous look. "It would be my pleasure." "Pleasure or not, get moving. That's an order from Emperor Jagang himself." She pointed a thumb back over her shoulder. "That way." The soldier dipped his head in a bow, obviously fearful of her ability with magic. He regarded the sister with a kind of wary, if unspoken, loathing. These men obviously did not hold those with the gift in high regard. "I'll be seeing more of you soon," the man promised Kaelin before he ran off to do as he'd been ordered. Kaelin saw Sister Armina giving the man with the broken nose the same instructions. She spoke in a voice that Kaelin couldn't hear over the riot of cheering, but the man clearly heard her because he stiffened with fear, bowed to her, and ran off after the first man. Sister Alicia turned her attention back to Kalin. "Tears won't do you any good. Now get going." Kalin didn't argue. The sooner it was over, the better. She started out at once, counting herself fortunate to have eliminated two of the four who had so far been able to see her. She had to skirt the Jala game that was working the crowd of men to a fever pitch of excitement. She paused at one point to rise up on her tiptoes and make sure where the rock was. Then she headed for it. By the time she had made it back to Jagang's tent, they had collected five men. All of them stood outside the tent, awaiting orders, including the one nursing his broken nose. He glared at her as she walked past him, ushered through the tent's opening by the two sisters. Kalin had managed to quickly arm herself after Sister Alicia had rescued her the first time. This time, though, Kalin had seen to it that she secured two knives, one for each hand. She held the hilts in her fists, with the blades lying up against the insides of her wrists, so that the sisters, following her at a good distance, hadn't been able to see them. Kalin had managed to kill another six men who could see her, without the sisters realizing what she had done. It hadn't been hard. They saw no threat coming from a naked woman. They were dead wrong. With their guard down, she had been able to thrust her weapons home quickly and without a fuss. There was so much noise, confusion, drinking, yelling, and fighting in the camp that the sisters never noticed the men Kalin had taken out. When she hadn't been able to dispatch the men who could see her, either because Sister Alicia or Amina were too close, or because they were watching closely and rushed in to rescue her and give the soldiers their new assignments as special guards, Kalin always let her knives slip to the ground and vanish under the throng of soldiers, so that the sisters wouldn't suspect what she had been up to. Being invisible to almost all the men, it had been easy enough to get more knives throughout the long, nerve-wracking walk among the soldiers. Once inside the tent, Jagang threw Kalin's clothes at her. "Get dressed." Rather than questioning his reasons for a command she hadn't expected, she wasted no time in complying with his orders. Under the unwavering dark gaze of the man, it was a huge relief to finally have her clothes back on. It didn't seem to lessen his obvious interest in what he had seen, though. His attention finally turned to the two sisters.
"I've instructed our new guards in their duties."
He smiled in a way that made both sisters swallow in dread.
"What with some guards to take the load off your backs, it will give you some free time to spend in the tents. Being on your backs for a different duty."
"But, Excellency," Sister Amina said in a trembling voice, "we have done everything you requested. We got the men."
"You think that because you do as you're told for a short time that I will forget the years you have been running around plotting and scheming to do me in? You think I will so easily forget your neglect of your duty to others, your obligations to the cause of the Order, your moral responsibility to sacrifice your worldly wishes to the good of others?"
"It wasn't that way, Excellency." Sister Amina dry-washed her hands as she searched for words that might save her. "Yes, we were shamefully selfish, I admit, but we had no direct thought to harm you." He snorted a laugh.
"You don't think freeing the Keeper of the Underworld would harm me? You don't think turning mankind over to the Keeper of the Dead would be against me? Against the ways of the Order? Against the Creator?"
Sister Amina fell silent. She knew she had no argument. Kalin had always thought of the sisters as vipers. But now they were writhing before someone with hide too tough to sink their fangs into. Sister Alicia and Amina were attractive women. Kalin had the feeling that their looks were only going to make it worse for them out among the animals that were the Imperial Order army.
"I have control of the—"
Jagang caught himself almost using her title.
"Of Kalin, through the collar, through your ability. You don't need to be present for me to call upon that power if necessary. Just alive. I will instruct the men that I don't want you two murdered while they are enjoying your feminine charms."
"Thank you, Excellency," Sister Alicia managed in a small voice. She was gripping her skirts in white-knuckled fists.
"Now there are two men waiting outside who have been instructed in what they are to do with you both. Go with them."
He grinned at them like death itself.
"Have a good night, ladies."
You deserve it, and many more.
As they left the tent, Kalin stood in the center, awaiting a similar fate. Jagang stepped closer to her. Kalin thought she might either faint from dread or be sick at the thought of what was about to happen to her. Chapter 45. Kalin stared at the pattern in the carpet on the ground at her feet. She didn't want to look defiantly into Jagang's black eyes. A show of bravery at the moment, she knew, would serve little purpose. When she had been made to walk while the sisters rode, she had always told herself that it would make her stronger, for a time when she would need strength. In much the same way, she wouldn't now use her resolve for a useless show of defiance, railing against her captor and what he was about to do to her when she knew that she could do nothing to stop it, would only be squandering her strength. She wanted to save her hot rage until the time was right. And that time would come. She promised herself that such a time would come. Even if it was when she threw herself into the teeth of death itself, she would unleash her smoldering anger at those who did this to her and all the other innocent victims of the Imperial Order. She saw Jagang's boots appear right in front of her. She held her breath, expecting him to seize her. She didn't know what she would do when it actually happened, how she would be able to endure what she knew he was going to do. Her gaze lifted just a little, just enough to see where his knife was on his belt. He rested the heel of his hand on the knife handle.
"We're going out," he said.
Kalin looked up with a frown.
"Out? For what purpose?" "Tonight is a night of Jala Dijin tournaments. Different units of our soldiers have teams. There are nights devoted to the tournaments. It lifts the hearts of our forces to have their emperor there to witness how they play the game. Men are also gathered from all over the conquered parts of the New World and given the chance to join in challenging other teams. It is a great opportunity for them to begin to fit into the new culture we bring to defeated lands, to become part of the fabric of the Order, to participate in our ways. The best players can sometimes become heroes. Women fight over such men. The men of my team are all such men. Heroes who never lose. Crowds of women wait for these men after the games, eager to open their legs for them. Jala players have their pick of any woman."
Kalin noted that while, as emperor, Jagang probably had the pick of many women who would want to be close to such a man of authority and power, he would rather force himself on her. He would rather take what was not offered, have what he had not won as a result of merit.
"Tonight some of those teams play for ranking. They all hope that one day they might have the chance to play my team in a grand contest for top honors. My team plays the best of the best once or twice a month. They never lose. There is always a burning hope among each new group of challengers that they will be the ones to defeat the best, the Emperor's team, and be crowned champions of the games. There would be many rewards for such a team, not the least of which would be the most beautiful of the women who are now eager only to be with the men of my team."
He seemed to enjoy telling her about the habits of such women, as if he were generalizing about all women, and in so doing telling her that he thought she was at heart the same. She would rather open a vein. She ignored the innuendo and asked him something else instead. "If your team is not playing, why do you wish to watch? Surely a man such as you would not bestow your precious presence on the faithful on such a regular basis just to be generous." He peered at her with a puzzled look, as if it were a strange question.
"To see their strategy, of course, to learn the strengths, the weaknesses of those who will become the opponents of my team."
His sly smile returned.
"That is what you do. Size up those who might be your opponents, and don't try to tell me that you don't. I see your gaze go to weapons, to the layout of rooms, to the position of men, cover, and escape routes. You are always searching for an opportunity, always watching, always thinking of how to defeat those who stand in your way. Jala Dijin is much the same. It is a game of strategy.
I've seen it played. I'd say that the strategy is secondary, that it's primarily a game of brutality."
"Well, if you don't enjoy the strategy," he said with a smirk, then you will no doubt enjoy watching men sweat, strain, and struggle against one another. That's why most women like to watch Jala. Men enjoy it for the strategy, the give and take of the contest, the chance to cheer their team to victory, and to imagine being such men themselves. The women like to watch half-naked bodies and sweat-slicked muscles. They like to watch the strongest men prevail, dream of being the desire of conquering heroes, and then scheme of ways to make themselves available to such men. Both sound pointless to me. Either brutality or meaningless rutting. He shrugged. In my tongue, Jala de Jin means the game of life. Is not life a struggle? A brutal contest? A contest of men and of sexes? Life, like Jala, is a brutal struggle.
Kaelin knew that life could be brutal, but that such brutality did not define life or its purpose, and that the sexes were not rivals, but meant to share together in the work and joys of life. To those like you it is, she said. That's one difference between you and me. I use violence only as a last resort, only when it's necessary to defend my life, my right to exist. You use brutality as a tool of fulfilling your desires, even your ordinary desires, because, except by force, you have nothing worthwhile to offer to exchange for what you want or need, and that includes women. You take. You do not earn.
I'm better than that. You don't value life or anything in it. I do.
That's why you must crush anything good, because it puts the lie to your nothing of a life, shows by contrast how you do nothing but waste your existence. That's why you and those like you hate those like me, because I'm better than you and you know it.
Such a belief is the mark of a sinner. To consider your own life meaningful is a crime against the Creator as well as your fellow man.
When she only glared at him, he arched an eyebrow with an admonishing look as he leaned a little closer. He held up a thick finger, adorned with a plundered gold ring, before her face to mark an important point, as if lecturing a selfish, headstrong child who was within an inch of getting a well-deserved thrashing.
The Fellowship of Order teaches us that to be better than someone is to be worse than everyone.
Kaelin could only stare at such a vulgar ideology. That pious statement of hollow conviction gave her a sudden, true insight into the abyss of his savage nature, and the vindictive character of the Order itself. It was a concept that had abandoned the distant foundation upon which it had been built, that all life equally had the right to exist for its own sake. In order to justify taking life for the Order's own contrived notion of the common good. Within that simple-sounding framework of an irrational tenet, he had just unwittingly revealed everything. It explained the depravity of his whole cause, and the determinant emotions driving the nature of those monstrous men massed outside, ready to kill anyone who would not submit to their creed. It was a dogma that shrank from civilization, praised savagery as a way of existence, and required constant brutality to crush any noble idea and the man who had it. It was a movement that drew to it thieves who wanted to think themselves righteous, murderers who wanted holy absolution for the blood of innocent victims that drenched their souls. It assigned any achievement, not to the one who had created it, but instead to those who had not earned it and did not deserve it, precisely because they did not earn it and did not deserve it. It valued thievery, not accomplishment. It was anathema to individuality. At the same time, it was a frighteningly sad admission of a rotting core of weakness in the face of life, an inability to exist on any level except that of a primitive beast, always cowering in fear that someone else would be better. It was not simply a rejection of all that was good, a resentment of accomplishment. It was, in fact, far worse. It was an expression of a gnawing hatred for anything good, grown out of an inner unwillingness to strive for anything worthwhile. Like all irrational beliefs, it was also unworkable. To live, those beliefs had to be ignored to accomplish goals of domination, which in themselves were a violation of the belief for which they were fighting. There were no equals among those of the Order, the torchbearers of enforced equality.
Whether a Jala player, the most professional of the soldiers, or an emperor, the best were not simply needed, but sought after and highly valued. And so, as a body, they harbored an inner hatred of their failure to live up to their own teachings, and a fear that they would be unmasked for it. As punishment for their inability to fulfill their sanctified beliefs through adherence to those teachings, they instead turned to the self-flagellation of proclaiming how unworthy all men were, and vented their self-hatred on scapegoats. They blamed the victims. In the end, the belief was nothing more than fabricated divinity, unthinking nonsense repeated in a mantra in an attempt to give it credibility, to make it sound sacred. "I've already seen the Jala games," Kaelin said. She turned away from him. "I have no desire to see more of it." He seized her upper arm, pulling her back around to face him. "I know you're eager to have me bed you, but you can wait. Right now we are going to watch the Jala games." A lecherous smile oozed onto his face, like greasy muck bubbling up from his festering soul. "If you don't enjoy watching the games for their strategy and competition, then you can let your eyes roam over the naked flesh of the rivals. I'm sure that such sights will make you eager for what comes later tonight. Try not to be too impatient." Kaelin suddenly felt foolish for protesting any reason to avoid his bed. But the Jala game was out among the men, and she had no desire to go out there again. She also had no choice. She hated being among those vile men. She reminded herself to get a grip on her feelings. The soldiers couldn't see her. She was being silly. He pulled her toward the passageway out of the tent. She went without resisting. This was not a time to resist. Outside, the 5 special guards waited. They all noticed that Kaelin was dressed, but none of them spoke. They stood tall, straight, and attentive, looking ready to jump if told to do so. They were obviously on their best behavior before their emperor, wanting to impress him. Kaelin guessed that to be better than someone was all right if you were the emperor, and that it wouldn't make him worse than everyone. He fought for a doctrine from which he exempted himself, as did each and every one of his men. Kaelin knew better than to point it out. "These are your new guards," Jigang told her. "We'll not have a repeat of the last incident, since these men can see you." The men all looked pretty content with themselves, and the apparently harmless nature of the woman they were to guard. Kaelin took a quick but good look at the first man the sisters had brought to task, the partner of the one with the broken nose. With a glance, she evaluated the weapons he carried, a knife and a crudely made sword with 2 halves of a wooden hilt wired onto the tang, and how graceless he appeared in the way he wore them. In that glance, she knew that they were implements he no doubt used with bravado when slaughtering innocent women and children. She doubted that he had ever used them in combat with other men. He was a thug, nothing more. Intimidation was his weapon of choice. By his self-satisfied smile, he looked unimpressed with her. After all, he had already by himself nearly brought her to task, and to his tent. In his mind, he had been only a few steps away from having her under him. "You," she said, pointing right between his eyes. "You I will kill first."
This is the end of disc number 16. Please continue listening on disc number 17.